Well, it's about coming to a close. Can't believe it. Day went so fast. So I thought I'd give you some final comments and then see if there's any last questions. Maybe we'll sing a loving kindness chant by Thich Nhat Hanh's group. I love it. And then close out so I can say goodbye before I go run and catch this ferry. I think what I discovered in all the years that I practiced, I just discovered that Dhamma is not therapy. It's not a self-help course. It's not the key, the golden key to make things better in my life. There's a way in which we've kind of let Dhamma be taken over by the mindfulness, the secular mindfulness world. And the secular mindfulness world is concerned with how can I get, how can I kind of make money off of teaching people how to calm down, how to teach people how to be more productive, be happier, kind of do something to make your life better. But that's sort of like Coca-Cola, isn't it? I love Coca-Cola, but I'm convinced it makes things better. Everything is better with Coke. But in some respects, that's what the mindfulness movement has done. And I don't really fault it or anything, because I do think if people have an app on their phone and it's going to help them turn towards stillness, then great, it turns towards stillness. I just want to make sure we're clear that's not what Dhamma is doing here. So think about it. Buddha awakened, completely rid himself of suffering. Now, since everybody in this room, I'm assuming, is still not awoke yet, we don't know what that means. But theoretically, let's just say, he does not have any suffering. He does not have the mental proliferation. He has an internal sense of joy that's with him all the time, like a shadow. That's what he uncovered, sitting there by himself. In today's age, we think of that as a retirement plan. Like, how can I sell it? Got to get our website up. We got to get the little information out. Marketing team. How can I sell it? Get some money out of it. So he awoke and then gave it freely. Gave it to everybody, anybody. You can have it. That is a unbelievable thing to do, that he would give this to anybody and everybody. It doesn't matter if you're in prison or you're not in prison or you're come from money or you don't come from money. It never mattered. So that this Dhamma that we're learning is not of the stuff of the world. It can't be. If it were of the world, we'd all be trying to make money off of it. It's not of the stuff of the world. That's the biggest thing I hope you take away. You're not looking for something you already know. You're not looking for a way to get through things using the same methods you've always used. You're not looking to get away from anything. You're looking to understand and pierce through the nature of what's happening right now. You don't want to get rid of your difficulties. You're not trying to somehow another make yourself happier, nicer, friendlier, better. You're just trying to be with whatever is showing up so you can see what it really is. So if you get angry all the time and you don't know anger inside and out, then you're trying to get to know anger. Every time you get angry, you got to say, oh, thank God I got some anger here. Help me on my path. Help me understand this anger. Because more than likely, if it's anything like me, I learned that the anger I had was actually my gift to liberation. Once I stopped trying to run away from it. Once I started turning and saying, okay, what is this anger exactly? It keeps showing up all the time. So what is it? That energy, the energy that comes from anger, that's the energy that helped me get still. Because I had so much of it, I realized if I turned it towards a neutral object, this energy turned it towards something neutral and stayed with it, that I could see something, and I used that energy to help me. So whatever that habit is that you think is the thing that you need to fix, get rid of, and as soon as I get that fixed, I'm going to be okay. Mm-mm. It keeps following you because that is the thing that you're going to find your liberation in. So all this practices is to help you see. Yesterday was all about helping you see how universal this suffering is. We're all going through the same thing. There's no one person in here more special than the other, or more together than the other, or worse than the other. We're all in it together. We're all doing it the same. Today, I hope, was able to help you see that you also have the same degree of stillness as everybody else. You don't have to look in the room and say, oh, they're still, but I'm not. I mean, I was in this room, so I know you're all still. Sleepy or not sleepy, I can still feel stillness. So I want you to see that your ability to access that stillness doesn't come from a lot of big fancy words. It comes from just seeing if you can find some softness in any given moment. Can you find it? You won't know where it is at first. You have to look a little, peek around a bit. Can you let yourself begin to appreciate some of the seclusion you have? And then can you just watch? Don't expect anything else. Just watch. Pay attention. That's it. What I discovered when I started practicing this way, I never practiced with Utejaniya, but it feels like what I saw is a lot the way Utejaniya explains it. But what I saw when I started practicing this way is something I hadn't seen before. I didn't know it. But the mind and the body can figure this out on their own. I mean, the same mind that can enable a child to learn how to speak. We don't actually teach it to speak. It just starts speaking. At first it's weird words. And they talk to you like they're making sense, but they're not. And then one day they're just standing there and they're like, can I have some water? And you're just like, what? I understood that. How did that come out? The same mind that can take garbled little sounds and turn it into words and we understand it is the same mind that can take discomfort, dis-ease, difficulty, all of that, and turn it into wisdom. But we have to not get in there and do anything about it. We just have to watch and let the mind do what the mind knows how to do. So that's what I'm hoping that I've encouraged you to begin to question whether you have to do much and whether you could just watch it. I know you guys are going to have Adrian Ross come. I know Brock's going to talk about it, but you have Adrienne Ross coming, and she's going to talk about the five faculties. If you can come and hear about the five faculties, then come and hear about the five faculties. Because what the five faculties are, is there are five qualities of mind that are inherent in the mind. We don't do anything to make it happen. But those five qualities, once it starts rolling, it rolls into Dhamma. And that's how I can sit here. So it wasn't me making my practice wiser, stiller, more kinder. It was the faculties that once they got started, it's like turning the wheel of Dhamma, and it rolls on and on and on. And it then became. That's why the level of concentration today is so much stronger, because all I had to do was encourage you to keep staying here, staying here, staying here, staying here. And I knew that once we all stayed, that concentration would begin to come on its own. Not something anyone in the room had to make happen. It's something that's going to happen once I, if I can get you to stay in the room. That's all my job is, get you to stay in the room. So one little bit of caution. With concentration comes concentration. So what that means is you have some concentration build up here. So when you go home, like last night, your mind's going to be focused. And if it puts it on something unwholesome or harmful or anger, it's going to be focused on that. If you put it on something kinder, softer, it's going to be focused on that. So try to just give yourself a couple of days where you put the mind on something softer. If you have some anger, irritation thing that shows up, just give yourself permission to say, I'm not going to dwell on that right now. I'm going to dwell on that on Wednesday. But for the next Monday, Tuesday, we're looking at puppies and babies. We're looking at cute things, soft things. So that you can reap the benefits of this for a while before you move out of it. It's going to shift on its own. It might shift by, tomorrow. Who knows? You don't know when it's going to shift, but it's going to shift. You just don't want it to dwell on something that's harmful to you or anyone else until it shifts. Yeah.
Could you give us some way to look at my president and other unattractive type presidents that will be infiltrating as soon as we get out in the world and happen to read a headline while we're on a bus? I mean, how do we do that? You mentioned his name, which really surprised me. I didn't know you would do that publicly. You did it.
Yeah. Well, I think it's something I learned when I worked in prison. Hurt people hurt people. So I'm not saying we have to feel sorry for him, but we do have to recognize you can't cause that much pain in other people's lives without having a lot of pain in your own. So you just send metta. If you're going to notice him and you're going to hear about it, send metta. Send some kind of kindness. It's like I tell people a lot that George Bush, the son, actually is the reason why I came to such a great connection with metta, because I got so angry in his presidency that it was overwhelming, and I had to do something about that anger, and I did so much work around it that he just became my neutral person the whole year. Like, oh, I'm sending metta, man. Thank you. Thank you. Now, I kind of wish he was back there, presidency, but I digress. Like, if I had to have a Republican. Anyway, so what I'm encouraging you to do is to protect the practice you've done this far. Protect this gentle mind of yours. Don't just subject it to anything. So if you see yourself getting caught up in something, have the wisdom to say, I got to protect this mind. I gotta protect it because it's done a lot for you today to show you over this weekend how still and peaceful it can get. Then protect it from just some of the haphazardness that can be out there in the world. Nobody else can protect it except for you. So you just take a little bit of care. That's all you're trying to do. You're not trying to hold on to something and keep it and make it this way. You're just trying to protect it and have a little care with it. So let's see if there's any other questions. We have time for maybe 15 minutes or so. I was told that Canadians don't really ask questions. Don't really. You guys are pretty quiet. I'll put you in the groups again. Then you'll be like, rowdy. Let me go behind you and then we'll do it. Yeah. 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 It's a kind of a weird phenomenon because time is made up. So it's we live in it as if it's a true factual thing. It's actually, 2:40. 2:35. It's not. It's just this moment, and it goes moment to moment to moment. So instead, let's say that you leave and like I gotta go catch the ferry, and there's a bit of urgency that's gonna come with all of that, and there's a bishop rushing around, and at first it was all peaceful and still. It's noticing. I'm getting a little about the rushing. Once you notice that. That's your warning signal. It's like, oh, we just need to find our kind of a sense of seclusion, stillness, and just allow whatever's happening. So you can learn to have rushing energy on top of a still spot. And then the time itself, you can still move quickly or slow or whatever in relation to time, but you're not driven, but your sense of stillness isn't driven by it. That's pretty much what it is. It's learning. One way I used to practice with this as an example, you can try it, is you could imagine this room at 4 a.m. So 4 a.m. in the morning, lights are off, there's no people in here. Probably won't have any chairs or anything. It's very quiet, dark, empty space. Right? So you just take a moment. Just think about what this room would look like at 4 a.m. There would be nothing. Be very still. And then you add a few chairs in. Add some people sitting in the chairs. Turn some lights on. Maybe hear some little birds out there. But can you sense that the 4 a.m. space is still here? It never goes anywhere. That's the space that's always holding everything. So we always have the capacity to just say, oh, wait, what would this space be like if it was 4 a.m.? And then start adding stuff in it. But the 4 a.m. space is always here. And that way you can help find that spaciousness in a tight squeeze. Not always. It's always there. You're never going to lose it. I just showed you today how to find it. You've known how to find it. But I just showed you how quickly it is that you can find it. And so that's what you're doing. You just have to practice finding it all the time. Just a second. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, you go ahead.
A couple of years ago, I had the opportunity to try out some Qigong.
Uh-huh.
And then I felt sort of stupid because people have been doing yoga for thousands of years and Qigong and all the rest, and these things are really popular right now. I felt like I'm the last person in the world that sort of clued into embodiment practices, the whole mind-body thing. I've got that namo.
There's a whole bunch of people that don't do it yet, so don't worry.
Oh, really? Okay.
There's a whole bunch of people after you.
I thought I was the last.
No, there's a whole bunch left.
So I really appreciate appreciated how you were talking about how the, you know, the body recognizes this and, you know, has the memory.
Yeah.
And anyway, I was just reading your bio and I saw that you know something about Qigong, and I wonder if you could just briefly expand on that or something.
Well, Qigong, I know more about Qigong than I know yoga. And Qigong is the movement of Qi. And Qi is this energy, life force, that's in our body. So another way to think about it is where the mind goes, Qi goes. So if you put your attention on, it's what we've built up this concentration, so if you put your attention on something irritating, all your Qi, all your whole energy goes psh, onto that and stays there. So when I started trying to do this kind of more embodied practice, you sort of have to get to know the body you're in. And there's two ways to know the body. There's the mental way of knowing the body. I can see myself in the mirror and I don't like this and I don't like that and I don't like this and I wish I didn't have that. And there's this identity I have about this long life I lived and all the stuff I did in my life. That's one way of knowing the body. Then there's another way of the felt sense of the body that moves in the world. And that body is very free. It's very open. It does not have any of the judgments that the mind has about it. It doesn't have any concept of how much I weigh. It doesn't have any concept about what I look like. It doesn't have any concept of race, height, gender, none of it. And so I started practicing Qigong so that I could feel into that body. And when you can feel into that body, then you have this capacity to get to know who you really are. Really are. Some people can do that with yoga, but I never could get into the poses of yoga. And I just don't have that, I just don't have the bendability that other people had. But Qigong is slow movement, and I was always going too fast, and I'd always have to slow down. But after a while, you get used to the temperament of it, and you actually can feel energy moving in the body. Then when you're sitting and you feel energy moving in the body, you're not afraid of it. You know it's energy. You know it's not saying anything about you. So, yeah, there's a lot of Qigong online that's very, very, very popular. I always use the Shibachi 18 movement Qigong. It's called Shibachi, and it's 18 movements, but there's all, like, hundreds of, thousands, I should say, of variations on Qigong. But that's 18 movements. It's a sequential flow, and usually takes about, think about half hour to get through it. And so you can look online. They have all these different teachers that are doing the 18 movements. You get some music, and then you just do one flow into the next flow, into the next flow, all the way through 18. Good. Mm-hmm. There's another question over here. Oh, yeah. So let's say you're getting activated, right? Get in your car, and somebody cuts you off, you know, and all of a sudden you're getting activated. Neutral things are hearing. Just notice sounds. But it's important to not notice, oh, birds, oh, people talking. You don't want to notice the object of sounds. You just want to notice that sounds are coming and going. It doesn't have anything to do with you. So instead of listening, think of the word hearing. Just hearing, that's it. Just hearing. And just hear. Or you could think of sensing, right? There's a way in which we can just drop down into the body and try to find that stillness, but sometimes that dropping down into the body, trying to find stillness, when you're activated, you can't find any stillness in there. So shifting your attention to hearing helps you access it. Shifting your attention to softness, looking for worse softness, that'll help you access it. Shifting your attention to like the felt sense of something like your feet, or the felt sense of sitting, or the felt, the touch, it's a sense door. I don't know if you guys know the story of Bahia. Well, I have to share this story because it's the best Dhamma story ever. It's so much like me. Bahia, I can't remember so much the backstory. I think he just kind of wandered. I think he was in a shipwreck or something happened. Anyway, he came up on this town and he draped himself in some cloth or some kind of bark to cover himself. And when the town village people saw him, they thought he must be a great monk. So they gave him, or they felt sorry for him, they gave him some robes and they fed him and, you know, treated with him with respect, you know. So Bahia went off to practice and he's thinking to himself, oh, I must be a great being. I got these robes, you feed me, so I must be on the path to enlightenment. Any minute now, I'm going to be enlightened. And he's basically thinking and practicing, and he's not really doing anything. I'm taking it. He's just kind of sitting there thinking, ah, look at me, I'm a great being. I'm going to be enlightened any minute now. But anyway, the Devas were beginning to get irritated listening to Bahia go on and on and on, Devas being spirits. And the Devas were like tired of it. So one Deva felt sorry for him and said, Bahia, you are not on the path to enlightenment. If you keep going down this path, you're going in the opposite direction of enlightenment. You need to go find the Buddha. Talk to him. You are not on the path to enlightenment. But he is like, okay. Thanks for telling me. Okay, I'm going to go find the Buddha. He goes, finds the Buddha. When he gets up with the Buddha, he says, you know, the Buddha is right at the beginning of alms round. And Bahia runs up to him and says, Buddha, noble being, I don't want to bother you, but can you tell me, quick and dirty, what the path is for enlightenment? And the Buddha says, not now, Bahia, we're on alms rounds. This is very important. This is the only meal we get, so this is important. Bahia says, I know. I don't want to be a pest, but you never know, I could die, so could you please tell me the quick and dirty. You don't even have to take a long time. Just give it to me quick and dirty. I'll take it and I'll go. Anyway, he pestered the Buddha one more time. So finally the Buddha acquiesced and said, okay, Bahia, here it is, quick and dirty. So I'm going to give you the quick and dirty. This is what you do if you want to be liberated. He said, when seeing, just see. When hearing, just hear. When sensing, just sense. When tasting, just taste. When smelling, just smell. And when cognizing, when he said cognizing, thinking, just cognize. And he said, if you just do this, the seeing when seeing, just see when seeing and hear when hearing and so on, then you will not be, there will be no Bahia in the sensing and the hearing and the seeing. And when there is no Bahia in the sensing and seeing and hearing and experiencing the sense doors, then you will neither be there nor will you be elsewhere, and you will be enlightened. So that's it. That's the quick and dirty. Anytime you are in any situation, your immediate turn can be towards, can I just hear? Let go of all the labels, talking, judgments, everything. Can I just sense? Can I just feel sensations? Can I just see? Just notice I'm seeing, not the labels, judgments, all of that. Can I just open up expansively and just experience that sense door as it is, plain. And it was good for Bahia that he insisted, because he did get enlightened right before he got killed. Some cart hit him, and that was the end of him. But he freed his mind in doing that very quick thing. So in some respects, that's what I mean by turning to the neutral. Find something neutral, some sense door that has no, that you don't have any labels, judgments, let go of all of that, and just pay attention to that. Don't want to hurt the Buddha, put this down. All right? And it's so accessible. Your eyes are always seeing. Your ears are always hearing something. You're sensing all the time. There's all this information. So anytime, you could just shift and go there. All right, I think we've said quite a bit. Leave you with one more poem by Donna Fouts. You who are so much more than what you, who you are, there it is, who you are is so much more than what you do. The essence shining through heart, soul, and center, the bare and bold truth of you does not lie in your to-do list. You are not just at the surface of your skin, not just the impulse to arrange the muscles of your face into a smile or frown, not just boundless energy or bone-weary fatigue. Delve deeper. You are divinity, the vast and open sky of spirit. It's the light of God, the ember at your core, the passion and the presence, the timeless and deathless essence of you that reaches out and touches me. Who you are transcends fear and turns suffering into liberation. Who you are is love. So thank you very much for having me here. So appreciated. I'm so excited when I first got here. Well, now I feel a little bit more settled. I do want to teach you a chant, if you'll let me. I don't know if you guys have heard Thich Nhat Hanh's loving kindness chant. It's very simple. I don't really need this piece of paper. We're just going to say, may I be filled with loving kindness. May I be well. May I be peaceful and at ease. May I be happy. That's it. Pretty simple. And then we're going to say that for you. And then we're going to say that for they. The they would be all those people that should be included in we, but really we're like, not those people. So they also, and then the we for all beings. Okay? So I'll sing it first time. It's a chant, so it doesn't really matter what it sounds like, because chants are about the energy and not about the sound of it. But I'll do it the first time, and then we'll do I a second time. Let's see what let's see if this is too high. May I be filled with loving kindness. May I be well. Is that too high?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll try to go a little bit. May I be filled with loving kindness. May I be well. May I be peaceful and at ease. May I be happy. That's it, okay? So we'll try I, then you, then they, then we. May I be filled with loving kindness. May I be well. May I be peaceful and at ease. May I be happy. May you be filled with loving kindness. May you be well. May you be peaceful and at ease. May you be happy. May they be filled with loving kindness. May they be well. May they be peaceful and at ease. May they be happy. May we be filled with loving kindness. May we be well. May we be peaceful and at ease. May we be happy. Thank you very much for your kind practice, sincere practice, and attention. I'll see you next time. You're welcome.